This is Speaking of Events, the podcast for event industry leaders. We bring together innovators, strategic rock stars, and visionary creatives to talk all about events, industry trends, and anything in between. And speaking of events, here is your host, Carrie Garbus.
Well, I had a pretty cool experience. In my opinion, at the height of the pandemic, I attended a virtual conference, and this was a hardcore. I was an attendee, which is rare in itself, and I'm at this virtual conference, and we had, I think there were 2,000 people attending, and they had breakout rooms of four people to discuss very specific things. I end up in a random Zoom breakout room with three other individuals, a Canadian attorney, a family therapist, from the Midwest, as well as a woman from Seattle, English-born woman from Seattle, who is a book publisher, for lack of a quick answer there, a quick intro to her. So the four of us chat, we're in this breakout room for about 20 minutes, and we, even though we're vastly different businesses, vastly different backgrounds, we got along, we connected immediately and got along like gangbusters. And we have the four of us, from 20 minutes together during one conference, stayed in touch for over 2 years. The four of us meet every other week on Zoom. We call it our little accountability group. And we just get together, connect, and chat. And that, to me, is the beauty of bringing people together in as what events do. And my guest today knows something about the power of bringing people together. It's a passion of hers. Is it fair to say that? Yes, it's fair to say.
Yeah.
Okay, great. Good. And I am excited to have our guest, who this is her first non-company podcast. So I'm going to be really kind and really easy, which means I'm just going to treat her like every other guest I've had on Speaking of Events. Please join me in giving a warm welcome to Rachel Heller. She is the Senior Event Content Manager at Bizibo. Welcome, Rachel, your first non-work podcast. How are you feeling?
I'm feeling great. Thanks for having me, Carrie. Very excited to be here.
You're welcome. Oh, good. Most people say, I'm feeling great. I'm always worried that somebody's like, no, I'm, you know what, actually, and if you said that, fair enough, if you were like, I need some more coffee or whatever your morning beverage of choice is, we're recording this on the early-ish side. What is your morning beverage of choice? This has nothing to do with events, but I'm curious.
Sure. No. And actually, one of my favorite responses that I've heard recently to how are you is, I'm having a day.
Mm.
Just leave it there.
Yes.
But I'm feeling good. So I am actually not a coffee person. I drink tea, and my favorite tea in the morning is probably Earl Grey. Big Earl Grey fan. I also really enjoy a London Fog, which is an Earl Grey beverage that includes vanilla and some steamed milk, and it's lovely. So those are probably my go-tos.
Yes, I do. I too enjoy a London Fog. I'm happy to hear Earl Grey has some caffeine in it. So yes. I trust you a little more than when you just said, I don't drink coffee. I welcome everybody's welcome. It's a very inclusive podcast. Tea drinkers, coffee drinkers, water, kombucha, whatever you're. And I said, what's your morning beverage? Really isn't an event question. It really is, because so often events professionals are on overdrive all the time and need something to keep them going. So London, when we get the opportunity to meet in person, I will bring you a London Fog. How about that?
That sounds great. And I think because I don't drink coffee, I'm always trying to be empathetic to fellow tea drinkers and make sure there's tea options in addition to coffee.
Yes, absolutely. Well, cheers to that, as I cheers up my coffee cup, because I am a coffee drinker. Oh, and I'm going to ask you the question I ask all my guests, which is, what is the one thing you wished more people knew about events?
So my answer actually very much aligns with the story you told, which is probably why you told that story, I think.
Maybe.
But I think for me that this is something that people know about events, but I don't think they really think about the impact of it. Obviously, events bring people together, but what I love the most about events is what happens when you bring those people together, whether that's new career opportunities, career changes, the kinds of, you know, partnerships and friendships and relationships that can form from events. Obviously, prospects can become customers, personal brands can grow, you know, new ideas for companies can arise at events. And it's really exciting being involved in creating those opportunities for people. That's, I think, what I love most about events and what keeps me going amidst all the stress that can be involved in this profession. So,
yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. I too, with the pod group that I talked about, I have a longtime colleague and friend that we had randomly met at an event, I think now 15 years ago, as well as the main way that Ovation, my company, one of the main ways the company gets business is I have historically gone to very targeted events that I'm able to meet potential buyers. And it is the best, as somebody said the other day, the belly to belly. Also sounds a little inappropriate now, but I get it. Have you heard that term, belly to belly?
Like, I have never heard that term.
Okay, so it's this old school, and if you can't see me, I'm sort of turning to the side. So it's this idea of like, you need to get like in front of people belly to belly, like belly button to belly, but I don't know, it's very, okay. So you need to get in front of people is how we would professionally say it today. Belly to belly sounds a little weird. So yes, I wholeheartedly agree with you is what I'm saying. And so what happened when we couldn't get in front of people? There was quite a chunk of time that all of a sudden it went poof, we can't come together. So what happened for you and your industry?
Yeah. So, and actually I was thinking about this, the ability to bring people together did still happen, just happened virtually. And honestly, I still had a really neat opportunity arise from a virtual event. So I spoke at a virtual event back in January of 2021. And, you know, I had probably about 20 to 30 people in the virtual session with me. So not a huge audience, but one of those people was someone who worked at a company called Sage Intacct. And she and I then later did a virtual roundtable together, kind of similar to what you were describing earlier. And we stayed in touch. And when she had a very similar job to what I do, event content. And when she moved on to another role within the company, you know, we reconnected and I ended up interviewing for her role and got her job. So her former job. So, you know, speaking at a virtual event can still lead to new opportunities, which is pretty exciting. But I think from an event content perspective, because that's my lens when I think about what happened, you know, during the big pivot, as we call it.
Yes.
was my role in content actually became very elevated because that was really all events had at that time. And it became a lot harder because we were used to working with speakers who, as you were, who would get up on a physical stage and speak. And now we had to get them to be more acquainted with webcams and lighting and sound and, you know, our TMP streams and understanding what that all means. And we also had to learn about it too in real time as we were coaching them. So it was a lot. And at the time I was working on an event that was supposed to happen in June of 2020. And so we had to quickly, you know, make sure that the 80 or 100 sessions we had planned could get recorded and streamed and figure out a way to incorporate that content in not a lot of time. So I think it was a huge challenge, something that I'm really proud of the fact that I was able to do and I achieved a lot. And I think from a content perspective, the amount of opportunity that it created for people who hadn't traditionally spoken at events, both from a time-wise, they don't have to travel now. And also, you know, if you are someone who potentially has a, you know, crippling fear of public speaking, asking someone to speak to a camera as opposed to an audience of, you know, 100 people staring at you, it's an easier ask. And so it gave people, more people, a platform to share the incredible ideas they have. And I'm glad that that is something that has continued.
Yes, we found that too, that we all of a sudden we had an opportunity for people who may have been too terrified to step in front of you, to be belly to belly. I hate that this is now the theme of this podcast, sorry. The people that were terrified to step in front of people were a little more comfortable, although this talking to a camera gets weird in its own way.
Sure.
It were able to dip their toe in the water of public speaking. And it made it more accessible in many ways. So to me, yes, that was very exciting. Congratulations on having that opportunity that led to your role at Sage, that catapulted your career or gave you a little trajectory to where you are today, which is pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
I love talking about speakers, as you know, that's my jam. And I always ask if you have a speaker disaster story, which you are willing to share with us, please.
I mean, I'm sure I have tons, but I think the one that comes to mind immediately was actually, in hindsight, was hilarious. In the moment, it wasn't that funny, but now that I reflect on it.
Yeah, they usually are, right? Like, yes, looking back,
right, exactly.
Like, that was hilarious and awful while I lived through it.
It happened so that I can tell you this story right now.
Yes.
So it was my first hybrid event. It was last fall. And we had, it was kind of in that 20-minute break between sessions where, you know, I would do the rounds with the other kind of staff to just check each room, make sure that the speaker is there, that they're getting mic'd, that their slides are working, that everyone's comfortable. And you just kind of do loops and you just continue to do that until the session starts. And then it's up to, you know, the universe. But I got a frantic radio message that one of the speakers was missing. And this was at the 10-minute mark, which is when I told people, like, if someone's not there 10 minutes before a session, like, call me. I get this frantic radio message that one of the speakers is missing. And I go to the room. Obviously, he's not there. We're looking around. He's not there. I'm calling him. He's not answering. We're at the 5-minute mark. I'm starting to think, okay, I'm going to have to get up on stage and tell these people, sorry, speaker is not here. Go find something else to do. And then he finally texts me back and tells me that he's in line with the other attendees to get into the room. And so
to get into his own session.
Sure. So I start walking the line. I've never met this person in person, but of course I've stared at his headshot 27 times. So I know what he looks like. And I find him and I'm like, hey, John, pretend that's his name. You can go inside and you don't have to wait with everyone else. And he was like, oh, really? I said, yeah, you actually have to. I did send you 7 emails telling you that in advance of this. You have to go in and get set up so that the session can start on time. He goes, oh, okay. But it was just
like John's first conference.
It was not. Yes. Like, I'm fairly certain he has spoken at other events before. I don't know what planet he was on, but it was hilarious.
Yes. So John, that's a first. I have not heard. I've heard a lot of speaker disasters. That is a first for me. So John goes and gets mic'd. Everything's good, right? Here's my take on John's backstory. Here's what happened. Oh, it's October, right, of 2021, mm-hmm. right? It's October 2021. I haven't been in front of other humans, maybe in like 2 years. I don't remember what it's like to speak at a conference. Oh, this is my room. I'm just going to go stand in line. Like, there were so many things people forgot. There was so much stuff that even in our training world, the first kind of back in-person gig on the corporate side that we were doing, we typically always historically in the, my company is going to be 11 years old tomorrow, by the way, July 1st, it has turned 11. This will air after July 1st. And we historically always ship our materials to the hotel where the facilitators are, not to the office. And our first one back, because we all kind of forgot after 2 years. The workbooks go to the client directly, which is a debacle in its own way. So I think I'm giving some grace and patience to John, who I just think he, you know, maybe was like, oh, right. There's so many things of like, how do we act around people and what do we do?
Yeah.
So despite your best efforts, John failed. And so how do you, other than 7 emails prep, how do you prep your speakers? Because that's a job.
Yeah, it is a big part of what I do. And I think, and I've been doing this now for 12 years. And my formula is basically to provide the same information in like 4 different ways, because you never know how people are going to consume it. So usually what I do is in, you know, the commonly known know before you go or pack your bags email for speakers, I will include the same kind of information in the body of the email itself. I will also create a slide deck or some kind of PDF that I can attach to the email. So they can just, if they don't want to read and they just want to open an attachment, it's there. I also will record myself talking through the PDF. I'll try to keep it short, like 5 minutes, and I'll put a link to that video in the email, and I'll say this video is 5 minutes. So if someone would rather watch a video or listen to a video, they can get the information that way. For events that are a little bit smaller, like if I'm managing an event that has hundreds of sessions, I can't do this, but I just did an event. We had a virtual event called the Event Experience Summit back in May, and we had about 30 sessions. So I was able to do this where I did like a tech check dry run session with each speaker and then communicated this information live to them in those tech checks so that they could, you know, consume it and answer questions or ask any questions they had. So yeah, it's just a matter of, and then if we are using some kind of speaker portal, obviously putting it in there. So yeah, I just try to, you can't assume anyone is going to read your email. So you have to kind of give it in a couple of different ways. And, you know, like the morning of their session, trying to, if you have time to send them another email, just to kind of get in front of them, it's a good idea too.
Now, those 4 ways are also good tips for the speakers in general of presenting your information that you're giving to your audience in different ways, because you don't know what type of learners or preferable consumption brains they have. So
yeah, for sure.
All of that. Absolutely. So overall, what is the one thing you wished speakers did?
So I did listen to, so you had a good friend of mine, Allison Crooker, on this podcast, who
I did indeed,
a mentor, yes. And just one
episode
of the most
3,
brilliant,
I believe.
Yeah,
yes.
She's one of the most like brilliant people I've ever met. And she talked about how she wishes speakers would practice more, which I 100% agree with her there. But I think just to kind of say something different, is I think that speakers need to really put a little bit more thought into the titles and abstracts that they create for their sessions. I almost think they should think about them in the way that email marketers think about emails. Like your title is your subject line. That's what gets them to, you know, make the abstract bigger and learn a little bit more about the session. And then their abstract is really how email marketers think about the body of the email and what's going to get them to click. What your abstract is, what's going to get them to add the session to their schedule, walk in the room, you know, zoom, you know, click on the
click
video
on,
link.
Click on, right.
Click in, whatever yes. The term is now.
Yes, yes.
And I think they just need to be really thoughtful about it and not just, you know, quickly write something down and hope for the best. I think attendees now, we have so little time to capture their attention that title and abstract is really your only way. And I've seen some events start now to get their speakers to make a little video, like in advance of the session that can be included with the abstract. You can get a little preview, almost like a movie trailer. I think that's a really cool idea. So just putting some more thought into before your session even happens, how are you getting interest? How are you, you know, creating some anticipation is really important.
Absolutely. And again, that hits those different types of learners. If you're having a written abstract or a video abstract, and then you're hitting those audible learners as well, which is, it's never going to be a bad thing to provide information in different ways, certainly.
Absolutely.
Very cool. Thank you for that. Talking about our friend, Allison, you both are a part of the Event Content Council, something she's passionate about too. Would you talk about it? I'd love to hear more. I know our audience would as well.
Yeah, the Event Content Council, I'm so grateful that she started this, you know, a few years ago. I think it's really provided community, in especially during a time where we really needed it. She also is really elevating like what the role of event content really means. I think for a long time, we all just were sort of doing it and not being very vocal about it as an option, as a career path for people. And I really think that this group has one, just given all of us a space to share what we're, how, you know, what we're learning from the day-to-day of what we're doing, how this role has changed in the past 2 years, especially, you know, with virtual, how we're thinking about virtual content. Also realizing that content is a way for people to network. I mean, I think we all get this sort of figuratively, but when you really think about how the, in those rooms, virtual or not, you're giving people a framework to connect on really meaningful ways that aren't just like, so where are you from? What's, you know, what's the weather like where you are? It's like, yeah. No, we are bonding over the fact that we have a common, you know, job problem and, you know, lifelong connections can form from that. So this is a group that meets every month. We're very consistent, kind of like your every other week group. We show up once the first or second Tuesday, I think second Tuesday of every month, same time. And it's from some of the biggest tech companies in the industry, and we're starting to grow to be beyond just tech, which is great. And, you know, we all kind of get each other. Like, we all have very similar successes and failures, and we bond over that. And it's a really incredible group of people. We are all very, you know, we're open to being vulnerable with each other and learning from each other. And we're going to be getting together in person, hopefully towards the end of this year, which I'm so excited about. And yeah, right now we're just a LinkedIn group. That's how you can find us. But I know with Allison's leadership, she has really grand plans for how we can grow and become more of a standard that people know and look used to. So
where on LinkedIn, or how can we find you on LinkedIn if we want to learn more about the Event Content Council specifically?
So there, it's literally just a group on LinkedIn called the Event Event Content Council.
Right. We will post the link in the show notes too.
Yeah. You have to ask to join, but you know, if you care about event content in any way, shape, or form, you'll be allowed in.
Absolutely. What do you think, had the last couple of years hadn't happened the way it did, if we were rolling along as old normal or whatever, pre-pandemic life, what do you think you would have missed in terms of, you know, were there things that emerged because of what we all experienced the past couple of years for you? Is there something, as hard as it was, as much of an interruption that it was, is there anything that you would have missed had we just kept rolling along?
I love this question. I think there's an answer for me personally and then an answer for like our industry. So me personally, you know, working from home the past 2 years has really been like such a game changer. I never thought I was someone who would work from home. I'm pretty extroverted. And the idea of working, I have like a really good friend who has been working remotely for many years. And I always thought, how do you do that? I just felt like I would be lonely, but I've actually really thrived in remote life.
Wow, that's great.
Yeah. And I think a couple of reasons. I think it's because I do get to have social interactions during the day. Yes, Zoom is not the same as in-person, but you are still talking to someone with a face and you can read facial expressions and, you know, have those interactions. And also I'm still able to, after work, go out and see people and have social interactions that are of my choice. It's not being forced upon me because I'm in an office environment. I feel like I can focus more when I'm home alone, I have the flexibility to throw a load of laundry in, which is really nice. And I've become one of those obnoxious people now who have a treadmill and I like walk and work sometimes. So that's great. And yeah, so that's something I would have missed, I think, had I not realized I actually can work this way. And it's opened up so much more for me. In the events industry, I think kind of going back to what we were talking about earlier to, you know, speaking becoming more accessible. I love that. I love that people who may not have had the opportunity to travel to an event to speak can now very easily speak from home. Women, I know women in particular, there have been numbers that I don't have immediately off the top of my head, but that have shown how many more female speakers and that we have, and just sort of non-male speakers that we have in events because of this, which I think should only continue to grow. And I will be very much involved in making sure that happens and doesn't change. I think it really, so Julia Solaris, who's like one of the like most interesting people in events and someone who I've gotten to know pretty well over the past couple of months, because he's done some things with Bizabo, which has been great. Something that he talks about a lot that I really love is how it's pushed the industry to be so much more creative. You know, we were kind of just going along and this major thing happened and we all had to kind of start from nothing and just reinvent how we do events. And I know hybrid events have been around for a long time and virtual events have been around for a long time, but they weren't very popular. And now we have to do them. And now when we're going back to in-person or returning to in-person, the way we do in-person has to change too. We can't go back to how we did in-person in 2019. You're competing with so many more things now with attendees' time that you have to just start from nothing and figure it out and get really creative. And I think the industry needed that. I think we needed that push. And so I'm really excited about that.
Yes. Oh, wonderful. Thank you. Thank you for jumping into that question for me. So how did you get here? Because you grew up in Queens. You're now in Somerville, which for those who don't know is a little piece of Boston. How do we describe Somerville for somebody who's not here, not from here? Not that I'm from here, but I live here now. So you're in the Queens of Boston called Somerville. Is that fair? I don't know.
The fact that Somerville, for those of you who don't know, Somerville isn't in Boston proper, but it's next to Cambridge. And just across the river from Boston. So it's pretty close. Still on the T. Yeah. I can walk to Boston. So yeah.
I was just there the other day, I told you. So yeah. Walking around, enjoying it. So yes. So you start in Queens, now Somerville. What happened in between? How did we get here? How did we get to Bizabo? Tell us.
Yeah, sure. I went to Northeastern, which is a university in Boston, and just loved it here. Just knew the second I got here, this is where I'm meant to be. And I didn't really have a desire to leave after I graduated. I really like having kind of a home base and knowing that this is where I am indefinitely, and then just doing a lot of traveling from here. So, and I lived in Somerville for about 8 years. I just love it here. I'm very involved in the community and it's just a really great place to be. So that's how I got here, physically where I am right now.
Physically here, yes.
How I got to where I am to the fact that you and I are talking today is I have always worked in events, actually, like since I graduated from college, which is not at all what I expected to do. I majored in probably the most broad things you can major in because I didn't know what I wanted to do. I did communications and business. It's like, okay, if I do those things, I can do anything. Yes. And then my concentration in communications actually was public speaking. And I ended up working at a company. I interned at a company called Enernoc, which is an energy efficiency software company. It goes by another name now, but I'd interned there and they wanted to hire me full time, but the only role available was an event specialist job, and it was doing field events. And I knew nothing about that, but I figured, hey, I'm pretty organized. This seems interesting. I can do this. And it it also happened to be the same year they launched their own annual sort of flagship event, and they needed someone to manage the speakers. And my boss said, well, you know, you're great with people, you're organized, would you want to do that? And I said, absolutely, that sounds really great. And she set me on this, you know, unknowingly set me on this path that I just really fell in love with. It grew, I was there for 5.5 years. It grew into being, you know, I owned the content strategy for the event, in addition to working with speakers. And I think I just wanted to keep doing it more and more and more. And at the time it could really only be half my job. So I wanted to see if it could be a full-time job, and I found out it could be. And I worked at a couple of different, you know, in a couple of different tech companies. I worked for an agency for a couple of years, but they've all been within this world of event content. And working with speakers. And I love it because it allows you to be both really creative, where there's a lot of storytelling involved. You have to think about different session types. You have to think about the different ways in which people learn, the kinds of, you know, places you put people to learn, how you think about session room design and scheduling and thinking about, you know, how people will spend their day, their journey throughout your event. That's all content. But it's also very project management focused and logistics focused. And when I go back to scheduling, you know, I worked on an event where we had, you know, hundreds of sessions over the course of 4 days. And there was two different schedules, like an A-B schedule, and certain sessions couldn't happen at this time. And certain companies couldn't have sessions at the same time as another company. And it was basically a giant puzzle. And I love puzzles. And so there's a lot of logistics and project management involved, and, you know, thinking about how you get a couple thousand submissions to a couple hundred sessions happening on stage. There's a lot that goes into that, and it's been a really fulfilling career, and doing it at Bizibo has been really fun because I get to plan events for event planners, which is kind of meta. And I get the topics that I think about all day are topics that I personally, as an event professional, care about. And Bizibo is all about event experience and really pushing event, you know, pushing the concept of event professionals, really owning themselves as event experience leaders. And I get to be part of that. I get to be part of our industry kind of reinventing itself in a way that I really love. So yeah, that's been fantastic. Great.
Congratulations. Mm-hmm. That's great.
Thank you.
You love to organize things. That's what you shared with me before. And very clearly in this conversation as well, which I think I too love to organize things. I think it's very cool. Yeah. All right, Rachel, are you ready for our lightning express round?
Yes, I am. Okay. Like a teensy nervous, but mostly ready.
Oh, good. Good. Okay. That's where I want you to be. I want you to be on edge. Yeah. That's great. All right. I'm going to put 45 seconds on the clock. And I'm going to ask you 7 questions. Here we go. What is your favorite moment in the event process?
The moment when you see a group of attendees in a room, virtually or not, listening to a session that you saw from the moment you had the idea, or the moment the submission was, you saw the session come in through the call for speakers to that moment. Like just seeing people absorbing and learning from the work that you did.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Who do you consider your mentor?
I mean, Allison, honestly. I've learned so much from her. I'm so lucky to be in her orbit, and I learned so much from her, and I'm very inspired by her.
Yes. To learn more about Allison, check out Speaking Events episode 3. Okay. this is your hardest hitting question, in my opinion, your hardest hitting. Ready? Take a breath. Yankees, Mets, or Red Sox?
Oh, that's not hard. Mets. Oh, exactly. I grew up in Queens. Come on.
Yes. Okay. Well, I figured. I didn't want to assume, though. You never know.
No,
okay.
I understand.
You've been in Boston a long time. You went to Northeastern. Like every Northeastern. Okay.
Anyone but the Yankees.
Okay. That is a very Boston answer, by the way. Yeah. Anybody but the Yankees. Okay. All right. What do you do every day to stay healthy and sane?
Um, I try to go for a walk every day in some form.
On your treadmill also, in your office?
on my treadmill or out in the world, preferably out in the world.
Right, yes.
And I do the crossword puzzle.
You do? Oh, that's
so yes.
Cool. Okay, mm-hmm. Nice. And yeah. If you weren't talking to me right now, what would you be doing? Is it the crossword puzzle?
I would probably be researching speakers for the events that we have planned for this quarter. There's going to be some good ones. So keep an eye on Visibo. So, you know, subscribe to our blog and you'll hear more about it.
Absolutely. What is your favorite thing to organize?
Probably a Friendsgiving. I do a Friendsgiving. I haven't done one in a couple of years for obvious reasons, but I think my favorite thing is seeing people who are in two totally different areas of my life, you know, meeting over a good meal. That's my favorite thing.
Oh, I love it. Final question. What's the best way to take care of an event professional?
I think make them laugh. Just find ways to make them laugh. Find ways to help them be silly and, you know, be a shoulder to lean on if they need it. You know, we've been through some tough stuff the past couple of years. And honestly, the uncertainty that we're all living in right now is also pretty hard. And I think just making them laugh, it's how I get through it.
Good. Well, Rachel Heller, thank you. You have lived through the lightning round, the express round. And I hope I made you laugh a little too.
You absolutely did.
Okay, good. Good. If people want to connect with you directly, how can they find you?
Yeah, you can find me on LinkedIn, Rachel Heller. That's the best way to find me. I'm also on Twitter as Rach Co. Heller. But I check LinkedIn more often. So look for me there.
All right. We will post that in the show notes as well. Thank you. Thank you. Wonderful job for your first non-Visibo podcast. So
thank you.
Pretty impressive. You're welcome. Thank you so much. This has been a nice, inspiring morning for me. I don't need another cup of coffee, maybe a tea, but I don't need another cup of coffee. Certainly. Thank you. Thank you so much. It was my pleasure to have you. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. This was wonderful. I'm going to be on a cloud the rest of the day.
Ooh, yes. A London fog cloud, perhaps. And
exactly.
Thank you. Thank you to our audience for listening. You got some great stuff out of today. And remember, if you like events, if you love events, even if you loathe events, tell someone about this podcast and give us a 5-star rating. Rachel deserves it. Come on. Make her laugh. Give her 5 stars. Yes, yes, exactly. Thank you again for being here. Thank you, audience. It has been my pleasure to host this and all episodes of Speaking of Events. And remember, whatever you speak about, to be speaking of events.
Speaking of Events is sponsored by Ovation, the gold standard for professional presence and speaker development training, helping everyone get prepared, get confident, and get ovation.